And we're live here, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. What's up, guys? Nick Scripp on the P2W Fantasy Podcast. A little bit of an improv show today on a Tuesday instead of the normal Wednesday. Have a little complicated soccer schedule going on. And, you know, I have the benefit of having one of my good friends on the show with me. So can't complain about mixing things up here. But just had week one. Going to react about what happened in week one today. And I want to first introduce my guest on the show. It's not like it's his first time on this YouTube channel, the first time on this podcast, but my good friend, John McGlynn, who grinds out the Commissioner Evaluation Show that is also on the P2W Fantasy YouTube. He's also a league mate in some leagues for fantasy football of mine. And one of my drinking buddies when he's not working, some wild shifts and we can have our schedules line up. We get together, talk some football, don't talk football, have a couple beers and hang out. So, John, glad to have you on the show yet again. Can you remind everybody where we can find you and what you got going on this season, man?
John McGlynn, 75 on the Twitter machine. And what I got going on this season is the Commissioner Evaluation Podcast. I pop up once in a while on other people's shows too. I love talking fantasy football, just hanging out with people. And this is what it's all about. I'm not quite as intensive as the man on the screen with myself, but you know, that's almost impossible to do the work that he does. So I'll try to keep up around here today and keep up with the king.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know you will, because you are at it every day, just like the rest of the analysts out there when it comes to grinding actual leagues and also just talking football. So this podcast will probably feel more like just two guys having a beer, which I have right next to me, and talking some football, but breaking down what happened in week one. But before we hop into the actual show, as always, this podcast is partnered up with the Fantasy Points Media Group, which is a branch of fantasypoints.com. It's a one-stop shop for everything fantasy you're looking for, the articles, the projections. They have media. They have an awesome Discord. Anything that you want, advanced stats, all in one spot. If you sign up today, use the promo code P2W22 for a discount. Well worth it. John and I are going to break down some reactions to week one. Stick with us here.
No fear to give, I feel but I can't forgive. I go all in this time, yeah, I won't regret. I'll pick the best on trip, they don't understand. I play to win, yeah, I play to win, I play to win. Yeah, yeah, I play to win, I play to win. Oh, play to win, I play to win. Yeah, yeah, I play to win, I play to win.
All right, so if you guys are tuning in, we are going to react to week one, some different topics. It's important to, you know, kind of sift out how we should overreact, not overreact, and everything in the middle. But before we get into the show, John, I just talked to you about, you know, some soccer stuff going on. I was disappointed with two ties back-to-back days. I was also disappointed this past weekend getting my ass kicked by you in your league. So outside of you kicking my ass in that league, how did week one go for you just as a fantasy manager?
Well, it was nice. I run a bunch of home leagues, so this was a great weekend because I got to beat my arch nemesis, John McNamara, who, you know, he lives literally right behind me, and Joe Castleman, who is a friend of ours also, a mutual friend of ours also, lives right across the street from me. I beat John, I beat Nick, I beat Steven Johnson, Justin Taylor. Like, I went across the board. It was like a murderer's row this week. I got to beat all the guys that really meant something in my home leagues to me. It really was special, kind of sweeping the bases here with these wins. I just barely almost got eliminated from the John Paulson's eliminator. I was like second. I scored like 43 points. I'm like, holy cow. I thought for sure I was done for, but somebody scored less than me. I won the fishbowl. I'm in a campus Canton league. I lost that one. That was one of my few losses this week. So it was a nice week across the board. I got to talk shit. Got to talk crap to a lot of people and it was a great fantasy ball talk. And I wish I wasn't working most of the weekend, but it is what it is sometimes. That's my messed up schedule that Nick talked about. So I only got to see bits and pieces of some of the games, but I listened to a bunch of podcasts, a lot of people's reactions, and it seems like it was a crazy week from what I saw, what I heard, and what the highlights I saw on Twitter.
Yeah, you naming a bunch of your friends, it's like that GIF or that picture the cartoon of the Grim Reaper going door to door, and it's just like my name on the one door and Steven's name on the next door and going down the line there. I know you hit me up on Sunday and you're like, hey, let me know if you were going to be up for that late game. And I think I was like in bed for it, chugging water, trying to get ready for the next day. And yeah, I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to hang out and watch some games this season when the schedules align there. But week one reaction show, I want to talk about good performances, bad performances. Again, I think it's important because some people will have a guy have a bad week and think they have to like drop or sell them, or a guy have a massive week and think they have to spend all their fad money on them, and then everything in between. So we got a couple different topics here today that we're going to fly through. Want to get to the point, but also make sure we elaborate on some of these guys. I think it'll be beneficial for anybody listening. But John, first question of the day. So we have some guys that have big performances week one, you know, the Sammy Watkins effect. Who do you think stands out that had a good performance, but we need to look a little deeper? Let's not get carried away with this guy's performance. Who comes to mind?
The first guy I talked about is a Twitter darling for many years. He's been kind of everybody loves this guy, OJ Howard. And because tight end premium is so important nowadays, I figured he'd be the one that most people want to jump on because it's the hardest position. It's one of the hardest positions to fill, and that's where in a super flex where the quarterback is probably even more intensive to fill than the tight end position. But OJ Howard, you know, he's bounced around the league for many years as a fantasy darling. Buffalo paid $3 million for him to leave the team. You know, the guy played 12 snaps. He ran six routes. He had two targets for two touchdowns. I mean, Lovie did specifically ask for Howard to come to Houston when he was reportedly was supposed to sign with the Bengals, but I'm not counting on this production on a regular basis. I mean, Brevin Jordan, I saw you had a tweet out earlier today, something I already kind of checked on, but Brevin Jordan had run 60% of the snaps, while OJ, look what I found, only had 17% of the snaps. So it's one of those things that I wouldn't count on this production at all. I think Brevin Jordan will be the guy going forward. This is just kind of a week one fluke performance as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. With OJ, he's been a guy I've always seemed to have a soft spot for. You know, he had that like glimpse back in Tampa Bay, just being a super athletic tight end where we thought he was going to be something super special on a consistent level, obviously toward the, you know, Achilles later on, but I'm glad to see him playing. But you alluded to what I was getting at with the snap percentage, because I think from a bird's eye view, people will say, hey, look at his fantasy points. Look, he scored two touchdowns, and then they don't look at anything else, right? We don't look at the receptions in the game, the target share in that offense. We don't look at the snap percentage. And it's important to look at that, because even though he was much more productive than Brevin Jordan's 1.5 fantasy points, he still was on the field a ton less, almost 40% less of the time than Brevin Jordan. So somebody said to me earlier with OJ, they're like, hey, his snap percent's going to get closer and closer to 50, if not surpass Brevin Jordan. And that to me just says right there, like, hey, that's why we're having this show, just because maybe it does increase, but let's not, you know, make him a priority add this week. Do you happen to think that he is going to creep in a lot in that snap share? Are you kind of indifferent right now when it comes to Brevin Jordan? I know you and I both are guys that have liked Brevin Jordan.
Yeah, I own Brevin Jordan on a lot of teams, so I'm going to try and deflect this and say no, not going to happen. But I know in reality, it's what have you done for me lately kind of situation in the NFL, which means not for long if you're not producing. So if he goes out there and starts catching touchdowns and Brevin Jordan is not doing what he's supposed to be doing, you know, you never know. Things could change. You know, another thing is, too, it takes like 3 or 4 weeks for teams to catch up to offenses. They come out, throw a whole bunch of different game plans out. The defenses don't know what's going on. Now they're starting to get film on some of the routes, some of the new offensive formations, some new things that happened with every team. By three or four, people kind of catch on to maybe O.J. Howard being open on a couple of these fluke plays. And, you know, it might go back to the Brevin Jordan show because he's familiar with the offense a little more than O.J. Howard. And, you know, he's like, if he, you never know what's going to happen with the snap share, but if it stays at this level, you expect Brevin Jordan to have a lot more production than O.J. Howard.
And I want to shout out to the guys in the chat here. I got Chris saying woo and LFG, which I think means let's freaking go, right? And we got Sons of Dynasty, great friends of the show. What's up to them? If you guys are listening to the show on Twitter, YouTube, feel free to comment if you guys have any questions or if you just want to say what's up. I'm always reading the comments and I appreciate the interaction. But I think we're on the same page with O.J. Howard. Maybe he does have an increased role in this offense. But again, I'm not going to chase touchdowns on that low of a snap percentage. But my guy, and I tweeted about it earlier, was Dontrell Hilliard, who had a huge week for fantasy this past week. This morning when I checked, he was the number 7 trending player. So that means he's pretty up there, and people are starting to click that button to add him to leagues, which I made a comment earlier. If you believe he is the actual Derrick Henry handcuff, then it's not a bad move, but I don't want people to get too carried away thinking he can be flexed. Like he's like a JD McKissick or a Nyheim Hines or, one of those type of players. But Hilliard, 21.9 fantasy points. That's good. He had 2 touchdowns. That's good. He had 2 carries and 3 receptions on 18% of the snaps. That's bad, right? It's only 5 total touches. It's kind of like O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard touched the ball, twice, and both were touchdowns. Hilliard touched the ball 5 times, and 2 of them were touchdowns. So I'm a little iffy on him, extending a huge role in the offense. Maybe he's the third down guy, but if he doesn't increase his snaps or start catching the ball more, then I'm not seeing that like standalone value that some people are hoping for. And another question I'm curious to hear your opinion on it too is I'm wondering if he is like the actual handcuff to Derrick Henry, because we saw last season Hilliard, once Derrick Henry was out of the mix, he got an increase in playing time and he actually had some decent weeks, but it was Deonta Foreman who carried the rock. I don't know if Hilliard's like that guy that's going to carry the rock and push it down the field. He might just be that third down, pass catching running back. And I look at a guy like, I'm not sure what you think about this guy either, but Hassan Haskins, who's 6'2", 228. I feel like he's like that Derrick Henry build, and Hilliard is just going to continue to play that role in the offense. But I just don't want people to get carried away, seeing him being a trending player on Sleeper, seeing those big fantasy points, the 2 touchdowns, and not understanding that he barely was on the field and barely touched the ball. But what's your thoughts on this backfield in general outside of Derrick Henry?
They have 5 running backs on this, that they can interchange in his roster. And a lot of them are big guys too. Henry, Hilliard, Hassan Haskins. I reached in a lot of, not going to say reach, I guess 5th round. I made sure I got Julius Chestnut on a bunch of my teams. Trenton Cannon is still technically on. I think he's still on the practice squad, but they have a type here. It's like a girl who likes, tall guys with dark hair or a guy that likes blonde girls. They have a type of running back here. I'm not sure. I think that Derrick Henry went in the tent at half, like right before halftime, had his foot checked on, so one of his lower body. I didn't hear the extremity that was having a problem, but I think Hilliard got a little bit of work because of that. But Derrick Henry is the 101. If something happened to Henry, I think it would just be a mishmash in the backfield. Nobody is Derrick Henry. Nobody could take over what Derrick Henry does. So if Hilliard could be the passing down back and still get some, between the tackle stuff, and Hassan Haskins will be the early down back, and they'll sprinkle in Julius Chestnut there to kind of keep those guys fresh, then it is what it is. But this is going to go back to a humongous Derrick Henry show from until they can't. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, because even when Henry was hurt last season and Deonta Foreman had some nice games, he wasn't getting like 90% of the snaps. There still were other guys being factored in, so I think that's a good call as well. We'll touch on it later, but I think there's some other running backs that I would prioritize on the waiver wire over Hilliard. I think he is a guy you can roster just in case, but we got Martin in the chat throwing jokes, but let's flip the script here, a little script play. The next question I want to cover is we're talking good performances and not to, overreact, but let's talk about good performances that we should properly react to. So who had a good performance that you think is a great sign moving forward? It was a good week 1. This is a good performance and it's a good sign moving forward. Who stands out?
Oh, this is a great sign. Devontae Adams is what I thought was going to happen. I mean, he had 141 receiving yards on 17 targets, 10 receptions, and a touchdown. He's the alpha in this offense by a long shot. His chemistry, he has chemistry, with Carr. They were teammates in college at Fresno State. I just think that he walked in this situation, and it was seamless transition. Now, I don't understand that Carr's not Aaron Rodgers, but at the same time, if this is what you do from day one, game one, day one, it's just all gravy and navy going forward after this. It was a fantastic outing for both these guys.
Yeah, Davante Adams, nobody saw more than the targets that he had in this game, 17 total targets. If we're looking at the offense, McDaniels, I think that people thought that, you know, he was going to overutilize Renfro as like this new Edelman, but that wasn't the case either. So do you think in the offseason when it comes to Davante Adams that people kind of overreacted to the team change and overstressed the quarterback change?
Oh, I think 100% they thought that it's not Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, because in reality, what I described the Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams combination was, you could have those guys on a practice field. Both of them would have blindfolds on. They can call play, and Adams would run a route, and Rodgers would take his three steps back, and he would hit Davante Adams. With his eyes closed, he put his hands out and tell where the ball was going to be. I don't think there was a better combination that I've seen in a long time in football besides those two. And people were worried that it wasn't going to be that way anymore, that way again. And it, sure enough, I mean, it was fantastic. The stats that he put out, I mean, they're not all world stats, but at the same time, 17 targets and 10 receptions, that's a good sign for the future.
And I don't want to overreact either to the Rodgers case, but I feel like a lot of focus was on Davante Adams maybe needs to be pushed down the draft board a little bit because he's with Derek Carr. And a lot of people did not mention too much about Rodgers like regressing a ton. We saw a really bad first game, and that's an offense that really needs to figure out who's going to be important and who's going to step up, because we saw a bunch of guys that got a similar targets now. So I feel like we stressed Adams' move, but maybe we didn't stress enough Rodgers' move. But we'll talk about Rodgers a little bit, so I want to hold off on that one. But my guy, similar situation as John's guy. It's a wide receiver on a brand new team. AJ Brown, he tied for the fourth most targets on the week with 13. He caught 10 of those passes for 155 receiving yards, which was the second highest receiving yards on the week for wide receivers. He was wide receiver 7 for the week with 25.5 fantasy points. Nobody saw more than 4 targets in this offense outside of A.J. Brown, so Jalen Hurts was hyper-targeting his new guy. Philly ran the ball a lot in this one, but it was very evident that A.J. Brown was a big part of the playbook and a big part of what Jalen Hurts was trying to get accomplished in this. And Jalen Hurts this past season, a player profiler, number 10 in deep ball accuracy rating. And I think that kind of is a stat that stands out to me because I guess it's a bit of an opinion that they produce based off of several stats. But if we're talking deep balls, it's A.J. Brown. Last season, he had a handful of games above 130 receiving yards, and he's just one of the most explosive playmakers out there. So all I see with the A.J. Brown fantasy stock right now is a high upside wide receiver that might get 10-plus targets very, very often in this offense. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on A.J. Brown. Is this something he is going to sustain? Is it going to be kind of fluky, or what's your thoughts with him?
Tennessee made a humongous mistake letting him go. He's a stud. Yeah. He's an alpha. He is an alpha. You make Jalen Hurts look good, and Jalen Hurts is not the most accurate quarterback, you know, in the world, yeah. But he could do anything on a football field. He's one of those guys, you know, I'm not going to say he's Calvin Johnson, but you can get the ball anywhere near him and he can make a play happen. So this is a great connection. This is a fantastic addition for the Eagles, who, you know, they're not as we know from their past history, they're not fantastic at drafting wide receivers, but to pick this guy up, fabulous.
And for a steal, it seemed like, I feel like they should have got a lot more than what they actually did for him. Obviously they had to pay his contract, but still, I think week one, they're smiling saying, hey, we brought him in to do this, and I believe
guys like that are priceless. Yeah.
So I want to make sure I shout out my boy Dan in the comments. My first ever podcast was on his YouTube channel. He said AJ Brown killed me. Haha, played Smith in the flex, which I think we'll touch on in a second here. But John, two guys that changed teams and had big performances. Tyreek Hill is another one. I believe he had a good game, if I'm not mistaken.
He did all right. You know, he's one of those guys that can go anywhere also and be good. I think he's just a freak athlete. He could go. There's literally not a quarterback that could make him look bad. He's one of those guys where he can run any route. He could beat anybody at any route, and he can make it. He can extend every play with his yard after catch, his yak ability. He's fantastic.
Absolutely, absolutely. So two guys who change teams, having good performances right there. And we'll kind of flip things around. Bad performance, that is a bad sign for what is to come. So this guy had a bad week, and it's a bad sign because, it's easy to, look into situations and say, hey, this guy had a down week, but he had 9 targets, and, he was double covered, or they played a great secondary or something like that. But it's also important to say, hey, this guy had a bad week, and it might be a sign that there's more bad weeks to come. Who stands out to you for that?
With bad weeks to come. I think Devonta Smith is one of those guys who's going, I mean, this is a situation that we talked about before where you have one guy that's alpha, alpha, alpha. Devonta Smith is a fantastic wide receiver, but this offense is not designed for every real wide receiver to eat. It's not, it's a running team with a running quarterback. I was surprised, super surprised to see what happened with AJ Brown, but Devonta Smith is just, on the bright side, he was on the field for 96% of the Eagles snaps. The bad part, he only had 4 targets. The worst part, he had 0 receptions for 0 yards. So unless you give points per targets, you got skunked by Smith. So I just don't see a humongous role opening up for him either. And before AJ Brown came to this team, I was really, really, really high into Devonta Smith. I mean, the guy's a Heisman winner, right? I mean, he's ridiculous. So it's going to be nothing but bad. This may be a situation where he needed to get out of town somewhere else to make himself viable as a wide receiver in the NFL or happy with his, he can't be on the field for 96% of the snaps and just be a decoy all the time. I can't see a guy of his stature being happy with that.
Yeah, I think it's a rough sign when you look at what the Eagles did in this game, and they did still run the ball more than they passed the ball, and then you had one guy getting 13 targets. So if you got a team that's still, we all thought, hey, they're going to transition to a pass-heavy team, and we might still see weeks where they do push the ball down the field through the air, but if they still are heavily establishing the run, and then you got the alpha, like John just said, getting 10, 12, 13 targets like he just did in week one. Plus, you got a pretty good tight end in Dallas Goedert. I think it's a little iffy. Now we're looking at Devonta Smith, who you don't know if he's going to have 6 targets or 3 targets. You don't know if he's going to catch the ball 5 times or 0 times like in this one. I mean, the goose egg was not what you wanted out of Devonta, who I think a lot of us expected bare minimum to be a flex play this season, just knowing the talent that he had out of college, former Heisman Trophy winner, had a connection with Jalen Hurts to a degree last season. I feel like we saw, last season this sort of instance though without AJ Brown, where he had a really good week and then a really down week, and it kind of staggered that way. I think you might have muted yourself there.
I'm not saying that he's going to get he's going to be on the field 96% of the routes and only get 4 targets that aren't even close to where he's at or against a good defender. He's going to be a decent wide receiver, but for what you thought last year when you drafted him, or, a couple years ago when you drafted him, and what you got now after, having this guy in your roster in a dynasty league, this is a terrible situation for somebody who had such pedigree coming in the league.
And I got 2 quick questions I want to put on the screen here. Dan says, great, .. We aren't to the point of dropping him yet, though, right? I would say no. I'm not going to say there's going to be a massive consistency with Devonta Smith, but I'm also not going to say that he's not going to be able to be flexed, or knock on wood, he's not, even a handcuff wide receiver where, if AJ Brown's out of the mix, who's been banged up the last few seasons on and off, that he doesn't, get a boost in that. But John, I'm going to turn this other question over to you. You said about this guy that you might be easing up on your feel for him. But my friend Lewis here asks, he says, go Bears. They got the dub this week. Any thoughts on Jay Fields? So Justin Fields for, let's say, for fantasy. So this past week, I think he had, I'm not looking it up, I think he had like 14-ish points, like 14-5 in the game that they beat the San Francisco in that monsoon. What's your thoughts on Justin Fields, maybe specifically for fantasy?
Specifically for fantasy, just his rushing, he's going to have like 150 rushing attempts as a quarterback. So just alone, you look at it, you need 25 yards passing to get 1 point. You only need 10 yards rushing to get a point. So, look, I mean, the fantasy points for his rushing, and that guy is not a shifty, you know, super quick. I mean, he's fast, but he's not like a Lamar Jackson fast. He's built like an alligator. He's solid muscle. He could take on hits. He could take a beating. He's not afraid to initiate contact. He is a fantastic player, and, you know, he sees the field, and he's one of those guys who is better at running, who's better at throwing on the run than he is being a pocket quarterback. People are built that way. That's the way they started playing youth football. They have to do that in college. You saw at Ohio State what he did. I mean, the guy's a phenomenal athlete. He's better on the run. He's not going to make any kind of, $100 million dump offs to a running back like a pocket quarterback would, but he's going to find guys. He extends plays and finds people in the open that find themselves getting open because he extends plays by such, he's such an advantage to an offense. And yes, he was inaccurate, but unfortunately this is the same situation where there is just such crap around him on this team. I feel bad. Darnell Mooney is like a really good team's third wide receiver, like a really good third, a pretty good second, but he shouldn't be the first option on that team. I mean, yeah, he's a good receiver, but I mean, this guy needs some help. And I understand, like, next year they got a lot of cap money and they got a lot of draft capital and they got a lot of stuff, but it's not now. Why would you draft a guy like this with so much potential and then just put all this garbage around him? It's a bad offensive line, bad receivers. You get rid of the defense. And on top of that, there's a rainstorm. Like, the Noah's Ark was trying to pull up in Soldier Field this weekend because there was so much water. And he mounted a comeback in the second half with just his playmaking ability. I think that Justin Fields, if he survives this one season of garbage, he's just winning, five, six, seven games would be fantastic. If he could survive this season and they import a bunch of talent on his team in free agency and quality draft picks, I think he's going to make it. I think this guy's going to make it. He's special. He's really good. I just hope that the Bears don't mess this thing up and next year draft wrong or just pick up defensive players and, do what they did to what the Packers did to Aaron Rodgers with their lack of offensive prowess in the draft. So I think that I'd buy low if people are scared, because it's worth the wait for as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I think touched on a lot of what I would have. I think just the ability with the legs, he's going to have that a little bit of a cushion with that. And even without, massive support with the O-line and the wide receivers being that good, because we had Dante Pettis and, Equanimeous St. Brown scoring touchdowns. I think last season we saw a handful of weeks where he was a top 10 quarterback for the fantasy world. And I'm with John. If they build around him, I think he can be super special in Dynasty. But back to the topic about bad performance, that's a bad sign for what is to come. I pick CeeDee Lamb, and I'm not going to say he's going to be a dud the rest of the season. I'm not going to say he needs to be dropped. I'm not going to say he needs to necessarily be benched. But, the 11 targets, that was not bad. But the two receptions in the game, that was pretty bad. And now we have Dak Prescott, who has an injury that'll keep him out 6 to 8 weeks. That's a little sketchy. We got Cooper Rush, who is going to be starting in his second ever game. Last season he started against Minnesota. He went 24 for 40, 325 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. So I think Cooper Rush coming in, he knows the offense. It's his fifth season in this offense, but I'm not sure it's good for CeeDee Lamb. I'm a bit nervous just knowing that CeeDee Lamb might see a lot of targets, but I don't know what the quality of the targets are. Are people going to force Cooper Rush to maybe push the ball down the field to other people? I threw out a thing earlier and said, hey, when's, Jimmy G going to land on the Cowboys? It sounds like they're not interested in making that sort of move, but if it's Cooper Rush for 6 to 8 weeks, I'm concerned about CeeDee Lamb because he's good, but I feel like you can only be so good to overcome like that sort of situation. But what's your thoughts on CeeDee Lamb?
CeeDee Lamb is elite. but CeeDee Lamb is not going to be elite with Cooper Rush. Unfortunately, this team is going to be a run, run, run. Hi, Christina Scripp. this team is going to be a run, run, run team, and there's going to be a lot of dump offs out of the backfield. And unfortunately, CeeDee Lamb is not. You saw how bad. I mean, I don't know if you watched that game, the Cowboys against the Buccaneers the other night. When Cooper Rush came in there, the ball was even close to anybody. It was bad. I know that he got thrown in there. He's one of those guys. He's planning on holding the clipboard all year long and being a backup quarterback. And they're like, get in there. The only good thing about that is that he's not Dak Prescott's not on IR. Jerry Jones said today they're not putting him on IR because they expect him to be back within the 4-week time frame. So this isn't gloom or doom for the entire season. This may be I don't know how bad the break was. Just because you break your thumb, it doesn't mean that the thing just broke in half or fell off your hand. It may be a real small fracture, which I call a break. A pin in there. I've had plenty of pins and screws and stuff in my hands. With the every day, as soon as that pin goes in there, he'll be working out, getting ready. I think this could be. It'll be a situation where CeeDee Lamb could still salvage his season because Dak. The faster Dak comes back, the faster he'll be. But he is not a fantasy option as where you had him before by any means with Cooper Rush at quarterback.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there with the change in quarterback. Obviously, we want Dak back sooner than later, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be anything rushed back at this point. But I'm curious to see if they make any sort of move and if they go after a backup. Maybe they go after a Gardner Minshew or something and go that way. But I'm with you. I don't think so either. I actually don't think so. Same topic. So bad performance, but let's end on a positive note. They had a bad day, but you're not worried about that bad day specifically. Who comes to mind, John?
For me, I mean, we kind of touched on him earlier, Aaron Rodgers. If you look back at last year, 2021, week one, he played the Saints in week one. He had 1.3 fantasy points in most leagues, 15 to 28, 130 yards, two picks, and then he won the MVP last year. He delivered a dime to quick. I don't know if you guys saw that play. Christian Watson he smoked his defender.
He clapped.
It was like he alligator armed it. It's all he had to do was put his hands up in the air, but he kept him in front of him like he was trying to, like he was holding a saucepan or something. He didn't want to spill it. He alligator armed this thing. And it was ridiculous. And that would have been, he would have been over 100 yards with a long touchdown. That would have been a whole game changer right there. I mean, once these guys recover from the dropsies, Lazard's healthy, and this team is going to play, it'll be playing on all cylinders again. Just watch out. It was a bad, I can only imagine how frustrated Aaron Rodgers is because this has been going on.
I'm surprised he got back out there.
This has been going on the entire offseason, and he's a guy who does not put up with drops. And when all practice long, he's going to the microphone. These guys keep dropping the ball. And then sure enough, he trusts this guy. Here's my rookie. Here's my MVS replacement. Look at this guy. He's flying. Whew. And this happens. I mean, he's going to lose that man bun he's got in the back of his head from stress. These guys don't start catching the ball.
Man, and you said the MVS replacement. I think some people expected Watson in the rookie drafts to be the Devontae Adams replacement, just based off how high he was going in some leagues. He was going pretty high in some leagues, and I was a guy that said early on that I'd prefer guys like Dotson and Pickens above Watson, but some people were very high on him, even though he had a lack of college production. But I'm gonna read something off to you, John, and let me know what your thoughts are about this and if somebody's going to emerge or how this is going to go. But here are the Green Bay Packers targets this week. So we got A.J. Dillon with 6, Aaron Jones with 5, Romeo Dubs with 5, Robert Tonyan with 5, Christian Watson with 4, Sammy Watkins with 3, and Randall Cobb with 3. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different guys. With a high of 6 targets. Is this just how the Packers are going to look on a weekly basis where everybody's getting a handful of targets, or is anybody going to actually emerge here? What do you think? It's kind of hard for me to read.
I was completely convinced that Aaron Jones would be the wide receiver 1 on this team in the season before, as the season progressed. Same. So Aaron Jones by far, AJ Dillon actually caught more passes, I believe, than Aaron Jones this weekend. So I don't know what the story is with these not having Lazard there. It was humongous. It was a terrible situation for Rodgers, because he needs that safety blanket. And I think if Alan Lazard is on somebody's waiver, he's not gonna be on a waiver wire. I would hope not. But if somebody doesn't trust Alan Lazard and you could possibly get him, he's gonna be the guy who gets peppered. Christian Watson is a best ball target. It's a best ball player as far as I'm concerned. He's gonna get his three or four, bombs every game. And all his targets going to be at least 25 yards in the air. He's going to have tons of air yards, and man, he's got to start catching those hits. He's got his drop rate in college was terrible too. So I don't, that's not something you could just fix. I mean, if you drop the ball your entire life, he doesn't want to go out there and be like, I don't care, I'm just going to drop the ball. He tries to fix that. And it's just something that, it just can't do it. Some people just have that mental block of not being able to fix those kind of problems. And I hope that Watson, it's the NFL now. They have a lot better trainers, a lot better coaches, a lot better everything. After seeing that, I'm sure all week long they're probably making him run sprints while they're throwing the ball downfield and, taping his arms up in the air so he can catch it or something. Maybe it's a situation where when he runs, his hands are stationary in front of him. And you always see the good receivers say they wait to the last second to bring your hands out and snatch the ball. Don't just stand there with your hands out in front of you kind of thing. But whatever he's doing, it's not working. And I don't know who the number one receiver is going to be here. I think it's going to be the running backs who are going to lead the team in receptions.
Yeah. Yeah. I said earlier, I on the podcast last week, one of my starts of the week was AJ Dillon, who a lot of people probably were starting as is, but I said he was going to beat his projection. He had a great week. And I think they're going to utilize both running backs. And I think some people, thought early on that Aaron Jones will catch all the passes and AJ Dillon will get all of the early, running work. But I think they're going to utilize both of them in unique ways and kind of intermix their roles. So I think this Green Bay Packers offense is going to be a team that I'm not going to say is led by the running backs, but I think both of those guys are going to get a shit ton of work just because of what we just read off about those other pass catchers. We got Gina Teresi Scripp in the chat here saying, hello, boys. She's not three dogs. That's just her profile picture there. But, John, my guy that – oh, go ahead.
What's up, G?
My guy had a bad day. I'm not super worried about it. I wrote down Darnell Mooney, and I was not on the boat that he is going to be like a top 12 guy this season or anything along those lines, but – I'm much more optimistic with the usage than what we saw this past week. One catch for 8 yards on 3 targets. He still played 90% of the snaps, which if we go team to team and look at some of the snap percentages, I don't think a lot of guys were playing 90%. So 90%, that's a good sign there. We know that this Chicago versus San Francisco game, John and I are both from Illinois, so we got to see the rain firsthand, but it was in the monsoon. Justin Fields only had 17 total attempts, so they were not, airing it out by any means. Darnell Mooney's a guy last season who took a big jump, plus 42 in targets, plus 20 in receptions, plus 424 in receiving yards, plus 127 in yards after the catch. From year one to year two, he had a great fantasy season. He was number 11 in targets and target share. So I expect him, on another day that's not a monsoon where they only throw the ball 17 times and kind of manage a game against San Francisco, to have a good target share. I don't expect Byron Pringle and Dante Pettis and St. Brown and even Velus Jones Jr. and who am I missing? And N'Keal Harry when he's back. I don't expect these guys to eat out of Darnell Mooney's target share. I expect them to eat out of each other's target share. It's similar, not the same. It's similar to A.J. Brown, though, where you got one guy who I think is going to be a trusted target and the rest of the passing attempts are going to be spread out a little bit. But Darnell Mooney, if I had him, I'm not looking to bench him just because of that game. But what's your thoughts on Mooney? I know you said before he's maybe best as a wide receiver two or wide receiver three on some teams. I do agree with that, but right now he's like set up to be a guy that should have a nice target share.
I was under the impression that Mooney and Cole Kmet were going to be the main beneficiaries of all the targets this year and this whole season. And it just didn't seem like it was happening. Now, again, I'm one of the old school guys where I've watched Dan Marino and Jim Kelly and John Elway and all these guys throw in the snow and in the winds and everything else. So I hate when people blame everything on the weather. It's such a cop out for not being able to produce. I mean, I understand it was raining outside, but these guys have played in the rain before. It's not like everybody played in the dome since they were in kindergarten. They don't want to throw the ball. It was a lot of rain, but it just didn't go. Yet. I mean, you had two inaccurate quarterbacks throwing the ball on a rainy day, and it was a lot more. It just wasn't what they wanted a game plan to be. It was a sloppy game, and Mooney's going to have. You've seen Mooney; he flashes in the offseason. He has what it takes to be this team's wide receiver this year. But I think next year, when he's a number two or number three somewhere, like on this team, hopefully you're going to see Darnell Mooney just be awesome when he can be what he really is. Some people are not meant to be number one receivers. He's going to do it because he's not going to have a choice. Well, they're going to be like, Mooney, you're getting the ball. You're going to have 165 targets this year, unfortunately. And he's a good enough player to make a lot of good things happen. He's not a wide receiver one, but I mean, he's a really solid mid wide receiver, mid to late wide receiver two that you can pretty much plug and play every week. I mean, this week was a different story because whatever, but I think Mooney is somebody who is. He's got so many question marks on all of his play or all of his situations that I think he's somebody that you could just plug and play as a wide receiver three on your team and be fine with the entire season. If your team's deep, you'd be lucky to have Mooney as a wide receiver three on your team. I think.
Yeah, I think so as well. He was a guy that I was targeting when I was like pounding the running back position in redraft, just because he didn't have to be my wide receiver one and you can get him kind of late. And at the same point, he had an opportunity for a nice target share. So I'm cool with still plugging him in next week, a plug and play sort of guy, like John said. The weather stuff, definitely a factor. Some will look and say, well, it could be a bigger sign, but again, 17 passing attempts is not enough for give him the boost he needed for this first week, but don't overreact to that one. So next topic. So, everybody will take the first week and find little nuggets of some sort of stat or information and drop it out there. And I like to dive into everything as much as I can. I just dropped waiver wire ads through a video earlier today. So I was like digging into each team and you find some interesting stuff and some stuff is some hidden gems. Some stuff is like draws, the next question mark for a situation. But John, what's a stat that was surprising, a performance that was surprising, usage that was surprising, anything that stood out to you as just a surprising piece of week one?
The running back receptions out of the backfield, especially like the Jets, 19 through the dump offs to the wide receivers. I mean, Flacco did throw like 60 passes, so maybe this is just this game, but Hall had 10 receptions out of backfield. Carter had 9. And then guys like Rex Burkhead had eight catches, and A.J. Dillon and Zach Moss especially had 6 catches out of the backfield. It was great to see the dump offs. I'm not sure if it's because week one and people were just kind of these guys don't practice. There's one less game in the preseason. Guys don't practice anywhere near what they used to before. So these security blanket running backs are, it's a humongous part of football now, and it's great for fantasy. It's great for ball control. It's great for fantasy football. It's great for a lot of things. And just, it surprised me just how much this is growing across the league with these dump off passes to running backs. I mean, you've always had your handful of go-to guys and your specialty guys, but it seems like everybody is now, you almost have to be able to catch the ball in the NFL nowadays. The days, of the big bulky running back, the Nick Chubbs and the Henrys and stuff like that, is kind of going to the wayside with these multifaceted running backs. And I'm here for it, man. It's great to see these guys. I like old school football, don't get me wrong, but I like seeing good football too, where plays are extended, that when guys are not open, your dump offs out of the backfield are a fantastic way to move the football and keep the offense on the field. So I'm here for it, man. I love this stuff.
Yeah, I think your list that you provided was pretty interesting. Just seeing again 19 to the Jets, Breece Hall and Carter almost having 10 targets apiece. Rex Burkhead, I made a joke before that he's the next Patterson, but in reality, he led the team in touches, total touches for the Texans. A.J. Dillon out-targeting Aaron Jones, surprising. Zach Moss getting the targets that a lot of people wanted James Cook to get. Surprising. So I'm with you on those target numbers for those specific guys.
Nate Powell was my teammate on for the we had a kettle strings draft that Evan Silva ran. It was in person, another in person league, and there was like 70 people there. Like, you know, 14 man teams times 20 round drafts, you know, times six drafts going all over the place. All Chicago people. It was great. And Nate and Powell was my, they had one extra guy. And I was talking to Nate Powell the whole time since we got there. And he's like, does everybody want to be teammates? And me, right, instantaneously, we looked at each other. And I'm not a teammate guy. And me and Nate are like, we'll do it. So we do it. And I had to work the next morning. And the draft didn't start until like 8:30. So like 11:45 in the morning, you know, 11:45. And I still had an hour drive home. And it was already 11:45 at Oak Park. I'm like, oh, I got to go, man. It's like the last round. Pick whoever you want to. So he texts me. He's like, I got Rex. I'm like, Rex who? Rex Burkhead? Are you kidding me? And, you know, he obviously that pick was a lot sharper mind than myself because Rex Burkhead is performing. Now, I understand that this is probably going to switch over. You know, the league's the rookie darling Pierce didn't just give him the workload right from the get-go. But Rex is a good running back. He's been around for a long time for a reason. And I'm happy he's there. And if this is going to be a constant of him being a receiving back, because Pierce is not he's not a receiving back. He's a plotter, not a middle of the field kind of runner guy, but he's good at that. And if this is the 1-2 combination, I'm here for it, man. I'm glad I got Burkhead on this team. I don't have many places. If he's available on your waiver wire, he might be someone to pick up this week.
Yeah, especially seeing he led the team in touches. So things get thin as the season goes on with injuries, and having anybody breathing at times kind of helps for the running back position. But my surprising, I guess, usage was the Giants wide receiver core, which I really thought was going to be, personally, I thought it was going to be Kadarius Toney as the one, and I thought Wandale Robinson was going to be the guy that operates in the slot and gets used a lot, you know, from Brian Daboll, who was the OC offensive coordinator with the Bills that like heavily utilized Cole Beasley. I will say with Wandale Robinson, he did play 9 snaps and he had 1 target before he got injured. So we're not 100% sure how things would have looked for him through it, you know, full duration of the game. But Saquon Barkley, who had a monster of a performance, led the team with 7 targets. But then we listen to this. We got 77% of the snaps was Kenny Galladay. He had 2 targets. We had 72% of the snaps, Sterling Shepard straight off of an injury with 4 targets. And then the biggest surprise, Richie James, 70% of the snaps with 6 targets right behind Saquon Barkley. We had, I'm probably going to butcher it, Chris Myarik had 1 target. And then we had Kadarius Toney, who played 12% of the snaps, 7 total snaps, 0 targets. He had 2 carries for 23 yards. So some people have said, you know, he's in the doghouse. Some people have said, well, he missed a lot of preseason due to injuries, so that's why he didn't get a lot of game time. You know, some people have noted with Kadarius Toney, he was once a trade candidate this offseason, but Daboll said he was healthy. But I struggle to really understand how to address this wide receiver group. Richie James, I'm going to avoid just because I think that might have been a one-game sort of thing. I'm not sure if I'm in on Shepard. Is he 100% healthy or not? Kenny Galladay is just out there running around for the most snaps on any of these guys just to get 2 targets. Wandale, I love, but he's a little banged up right now. But any thoughts on this wide receiver core?
Yeah, Shepard is a very good player. Just his injuries have kind of derailed his entire career pretty much. Richie, when James Richie got drafted, went to San Francisco, I thought he was a super underrated player on that offense. He never really panned out there, so I was wrong. Somebody I had my eyes on, I kind of liked his, you know, all the features about Richie James. Kenny Galladay, he's a St. Rita guy, local kid. I was rooting for him from the get go. So I'm sure your dad will, love that guy. But Kadarius Toney is someone I think they wanted to trade him last year because he is just he seems to be a clubhouse terror for the coaching staff. He doesn't, I listened to about 7 or 8 different podcasts today, and everybody was talking about how even during the game, when he had targets, he'd get off the field and go sit on the bench by himself, wouldn't talk to coaches, wouldn't, you know, when they were trying to talk to him, he ignored him. I think he's just, you know, he doesn't like where he's at, or he just wants to do his own thing and not follow the plays, the Giants' play calling, or I don't know what his problem is, but I have a feeling that he's not going to be there very long, and they might, if it's going to be a problem for their whole receiving core, or they can't get on track with him around, maybe he doesn't need to be around there very often. And Wandell, everybody liked Wandell Robinson. I hope this is not a big, I haven't heard anything about what happened with his injury, but I hope it's something big, because I have him in like in almost every league ever possible. You know, I like him a lot, but it's going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be the Sterling Shepard show if he can stay healthy. You know, of course it's going to be the Saquon Barkley show, and what did he have? Saquon had like 75 receptions a couple years ago when he had his big year. He can catch the ball without a problem.
90, actually. I think he had 90.
Yeah. I like Dan Bellinger a lot. But again, he's a rookie. You can't really, you can't expect anything from that. Yeah. Especially, you got to learn how to play tight end. You got to learn how to play wide receiver tree, learn the whole wide receiver tree. You got to learn the whole blocking scheme. So you have to play two positions right from the get-go. It's very hard to transition to the NFL as a tight end. And Bellinger's good, but he's not that good. He's not Kyle Pitts. He's not, Evan Ingram. Yeah. He's not these guys come in from the get-go. So this is going to have to, I have a feeling this is going to have to be the Sterling Shepard show. And I think that he could do it. With the opportunity, as long as he stays healthy, that's his biggest knock, is staying on the field.
Yeah, I think Shepard having a decent week of just being on the field a lot and seeing some targets is a good sign. I've had a soft spot for through time. I mentioned that with OJ Howard. I've historically been a guy that's like Sterling Shepard, because when he does play, he earns targets. Like he does, and he gets open. He gets the ball. He's had a decent connection with Danny Dimes, but we have some of these young guys that we think are going to step up, but it'll be interesting to see if a guy like Tony come week two now earns himself some more targets, or if not, then he might just be a drop candidate, which I really didn't think was going to be the case. But it just, we're just speaking on a redraft here, maybe shorter benches, but super interesting with that. But John, getting close to the hour mark, let's end the show on some waiver wires. So if you are listening to this podcast and you want to see a video before you submit the waiver wire picks for tonight, I dropped a board session video earlier today in the office. I had a list of names and I went through each name, talked about it. Go check that out. It's on Twitter, it's on TikTok, it's on Facebook. But I'm gonna go first here. So Daryl Henderson, I want to say, is not on a lot of waiver wires, but he still was technically under 50% rostered on ESPN as of this morning. So kind of meets the criteria. He might be out there, might not be, but him and Jeff Wilson Jr., I want to touch base on briefly. Henderson, 18 touches to 3 when it comes to him versus Cam Akers. That was very interesting to see. I actually, if you follow me on Twitter, I've been pushing guys before the season started to go and get Daryl Henderson. I traded for him in two different leagues myself. Will this be something that sustains the entire season? We're not sure, but it's a great offense. And if he does lead this running back room, that's huge. So here are Henderson's averages when playing a majority of the snaps in 2021. 14.2 attempts, 64.8 rushing yards, 0.5 rushing touchdowns, so a touchdown every other game, 2.7 receptions, 17.2 receiving yards, and 15.7 fantasy points, which is solid. That's what he did last season. The other guy I want to mention, Jeff Wilson Jr., Elijah Mitchell has the injury, and we can look and talk about Mason, the no-name running back that people have been adding beforehand. We could talk about Tyrion Davis-Price, who didn't play this past week. Some people said it's because he didn't have, the pass-catching role lined up, and he didn't, wasn't going to be a special team sort of guy. We can talk about that, but I will also talk about the fact that Shanahan loves Jeff Wilson Jr. The last few years when guys have been banged up and he has played, he's been good. From 2016 through 2021, when he saw above 50% of the snaps, here are Jeff Wilson's averages. 16.5 attempts, 76.64 rushing yards, 0.55 rushing touchdowns, 15.27 receiving yards, and 15.29 fantasy points. So again, Henderson and Jeff Wilson, when they've gotten the majority of snaps, have been very good for fantasy. That's my two priority guys right now. John, any thoughts on those guys? And then let us know your guy that you're trying to pick up this week.
I put a tweet out as soon as that game was over with to sell Darrell Henderson ASAP. You know me. We're in leagues together. I can't stand running backs on my team. So I got probably what's going to be what looks to be a really early second round pick for Darrell Henderson.
I like that.
I think Akers is going to be fine. I don't see any problem with he missed a block earlier in the game, like just whiffed and got his quarterback almost killed. So I think they were kind of like, man, listen, you're not going to be on the field if this happens. And Henderson's a fantastic pass blocker, pass catcher, everything. But I don't think it's going to be the Darrell Henderson show going forward. That's not going to happen. As far as Jeff Wilson is concerned, I think he's going to be the guy. I'd rather have Mason or Jordan Mason than TDP. So we'll see what happens. I'm not really. I don't think this is going. You never know with this team. Every year, it seems like someone just pops out of nowhere and becomes this team's number one, running back. So, I just think that if you're going to throw all your eggs in one basket for Jeff Wilson, then it's probably not going to happen. They'll find other ways to do things. Plus, they have a running quarterback that steals a lot of rushes too. So,
and a running wide receiver.
Yeah, this team is not. It's just it's like an old Tecmo Bowl team where everybody like the Washington Commanders, I'll say, before they were the Commanders, they had a team where everybody kept moving all over the place when the play started. You didn't know what was going on. That's kind of how the San Francisco 49ers is set up now. There's so much motion, so much people everywhere, multi-positions, receivers throwing the ball, quarterback running the ball, running backs, being receivers. It's crazy. And they got Kyle Juszczyk in there. That's a great early down back, too, a nice fullback. That's a very popular, he's actually in fantasy circles because he's such a good fullback. He vultures a lot of touchdowns. So you never know what's going to happen with that team. I wish I had more to say about that offense, but it's like one of those things where when the smoke clears, we're going to find out who it's going to be, and we may not know. I think it's going to be Jordan Mason, though. So,
I will say, though, just on a quick side note, and I said this on a Kluge show a while ago with from Football Guys. I was with my buddy Kevin. Last season, Jeff Wilson took over when Elijah Mitchell was banged up. The minute Elijah Mitchell came back, though, they said, Jeff, go fill the water bottles again. So I do think Mitchell's their guy, and a lot of people say it's a new guy every year. It's a new guy in a lot of years because of injuries. But I will say I think Elijah Mitchell, when he does come back, he's going to take that job right back. But
yeah,
that's my thoughts there. Who's your guy, though, that stands out? And again, there's a big list of guys we can name, but who's somebody that stands out to you?
Jalen Warren. He's already on a bunch of my teams. I drafted him in a bunch of leagues, or I picked him up at waivers right when he was established as the number two running back in this league, on this team. The team likes him a lot. I like him a lot. If you ever see the guy pass blocking, I saw a couple clips today, even throughout the preseason when he got on the field. If you just get a chance to look at some of his pass blocking skills, he destroys people. Like he's not just a pass blocking running back. He is like a ferocious, he's like a fullback. He's the way he takes on linebackers and pushes and just the intensity. He is such a powerful guy. As an offensive lineman, I'm jealous of how good this guy can block. It's fantastic to watch him play. He was the only running back to touch the ball when Harris went down with an injury. Yeah. Now he only had 7 yards on 3 carries. And, he's 23 years old on UDFA, an undrafted free agent. He's a quick flip to Harris owners. If Harris is kind of one of these things where he's going to have this Liz Frank injury, which could be a serious situation, I don't think he'll be the main guy. They're going to have to bring somebody else in if something really happened to Harris. If he has to have some kind of surgery on his foot, Harris said he's going to be fine. But I believe what running backs and players say about their health about as much as my local congressman, or whatever. So
yeah.
I don't take any of that stuff with a grain of salt. So as of right now, until the smoke clears, I'm 100% taking Jalen Warren as one of my first options. He's my priority option on the waiver wire this week, actually.
So with Warren, I would say one thing, keep your eye on the news when it comes to Najee Harris, who, again, like John said, he came out and said, I'm playing this weekend, and there's been some good reports, but I'm not a doctor, I'm not an athletic trainer, physical therapist. If this foot injury just keeps kind of popping up here and there, even if they say Najee's 100% starting this week, I think Warren's just a good guy to leave on the edge of your bench because it seems like, and I don't know nothing about the Liz Frank injuries, but it seems like it's something that might just kind of be lingering there through the season. So again, don't take my word for it, and look for the people who study this sort of advice when it comes to the health stuff. But at the end of the day, if they say Najee's good, and then you don't pick up Warren, and then this weekend, knock on wood, it doesn't happen, but that foot injury, flares up or it gets worse, you're going to be telling yourself like, hey, I should have just picked him up anyways to have a handcuff running back on a team that has a bunch of poor running backs on the roster outside of him, So
they may ice up his foot the whole week long. Don't let him touch anything, hold him back. And then, he's starting. He'll go out there the first drive and take a couple steps and say, my foot's not right. And then all of a sudden it's Jaylen Warren show the rest of the game. So you never know with this kind of stuff, but you always have to have a backup plan. There's always room in a roster for a flyer running back. Wide receivers don't, generally speaking, they don't become this massive payday like running backs do. There's running backs. If you get elite, UDFA or late round flyer running back in your rookie draft, you could sell them like hotcakes to anybody who's running, and everybody needs running backs. But I get rid of them all the time. So,
with your bench too, in redraft specifically, I'd rather roster, at the very end of my bench, a guy that can be extremely useful at some point, or a guy that has big upside that might be a dart throw of a week versus like a guy like, I don't know, Jameson Crowder or something that's, maybe he can be useful, but his usefulness is like an 11-point fantasy week or something like that, or just, a safe option that doesn't do much for us in a given week. But John, that's going to do it for this show here. And appreciate you coming on. I know you, you're coming off of a full day of working, and probably need to go pass out afterwards. But again, appreciate your time as always. Can you tell people two things, again, where to find you on social media, and then anything you want to plug for yourself coming up, anything before we close this one out?
Yeah, we talked about this being a real quick, 30-minute show, and like a normal, nothing ever goes 30 minutes when you start talking about fantasy football. No. So thanks for having me on, Nick. This was great again. I feel like I'm in your kitchen on a Sunday afternoon with this show. It's great talking to you. I'm on the Twitter machine at JohnMcGlynn75. I do a commissioner evaluation show. I'll probably try to do it every Tuesday. It's what I do for fun. It's my favorite thing to do anyway, besides just talking to a bunch of my buddies, drinking beers on Sunday afternoon, watching the Red Zone. So, my show is on this here YouTube channel of, the P2W Fantasy YouTube channel. And, you can find it here. And, thanks for joining us today. And Nick, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely check out John on social media. If you are following me and not John, definitely change that. He's a great follow. Dives into football, knows the game very well. Avid fantasy manager himself, and a pleasure to talk to on the mic as always. For myself, either dropping on Wednesday or Thursday is the Fantasy Points mailbag show that I'm going to low-key be recording right after this. So you have that. I have some good questions that the Fantasy Points brand will be dropping. And then I'll probably have another start sit solo show on Thursday or Friday. And then on Sunday, of course, with the Fantasy Points live stream again, extra point show talking sports bets with my guy Major. But thank you guys again for tuning in. Good luck with your waiver acquisitions, and let's get some dubs this coming week. Thanks, guys.